You're a parent, not a patient. As you now know about some of the expected changes pregnancy can bring about, it is the perfect time to tell you a bit more about what to expect from healthcare professionals, the different types of care you may be offered, and how to make informed choices. We will also touch on making the most out of your appointments, so you can really get what you need out of the care you receive. At a time when you're feeling a bit vulnerable or nervous about what is to come, you might not feel like you have the power, strength, or knowledge to call the shots. But one of the most important things you need to know is that you always have a choice. No one can tell you what to do. This is about your body, your health, your well-being, your baby, and your circumstances. All of these are unique to you. Others may offer advice, some of which is priceless and some of which is useless, but no one can tell you what to do. There'll be lots of decisions to make along the way, so this section focuses on what to expect and how to navigate your decision-making in the care of maternity experts. You are the boss, and you call the shots every single time. Appointments and routine tests. Every pregnant woman at every appointment will have a decision to make about something. For example, tests, antenatal checks, and screenings are all part of the UK's routine maternity care pathway. You'll be offered things like blood tests, BMI measurements, two scans, usually a combined or dating scan at around 12 weeks, which estimates your due date and screens for health conditions such as Down syndrome, and another one at 18 to 20 weeks to check for abnormalities. You'll also be able to find out the sex of your baby at this scan if you want to. Carbon monoxide testing, even if you don't smoke, testing your wee, measuring your bump, and listening to your baby's heartbeat. A quick aside, many women ask, what does FHHR mean on their notes? And it stands for fetal heart, heard, and regular, and it's normal. Most women are happy to have all of the routine tests on offer, but each test is still a choice, and you don't have to have anything you don't want. You can ask for more information before making any decision. The NHS offers these routine tests and screenings to all women because they help to keep an eye on your baby's development and see how well your body is coping with the vast changes and new demands pregnancy asks of it. You are perfectly capable of adapting to the physical changes, but for some women, these increased demands can cause other conditions, and that's when we recommend further testing, referral to an obstetric doctor, or another specialist. Many women don't need further tests beyond the routine tests. We consider you to be low risk, and midwives can provide all the care you need. We call this midwifery-led care. Even if you have more tests and they come back as normal, this happens all the time, you are still considered to be low risk. Measuring your baby's weight. A lot of women I meet become concerned about their baby's weight because, if you consent to it, we now measure all babies' growth more closely. We use a customised growth chart going by your ethnic origin, height, weight, and information about any previous babies. The chart has a few lines predicting how your baby will grow. At about 25 weeks and at each appointment after that, we measure your tummy and plot it on your graph. Sometimes the measurement is slightly outside, either above or below the predicted inclining line of growth. This can be worrying to mums, as it can sometimes look like your baby has lost weight or has suddenly had a huge growth spurt. As hard as it is, please try not to worry too much about the plots outside the graph. I speak to many women that are so worried about these off readings. Because this one reading alone isn't always accurate, if we think your baby needs extra scans to check their growth, we will arrange these with you. Also, more often than not, the scans come back as being normal anyway. Some women may be offered closer monitoring or perhaps medication for different conditions. This is when the routine care pathway changes from low risk and moves into high risk, so a doctor will need to take over your care plan. You'll still see a midwife, but the lead professional will become a doctor, and this is known as obstetrics-led care. Please don't worry if that's you. Obstetrics-led care, or high risk, is a fairly broad spectrum term that is used for a wide variety of conditions. It's more of a heads up to doctors and midwives than it is a label for you to carry around. Making the most of your antenatal appointments. Whatever care pathway you're on, midwife-led or doctor-led, at some point most women will be seen by a midwife for some of their routine and other antenatal appointments. You should be given an outline of your routine appointments so you know when you need to be seen and what to expect at that appointment. Most first-time mums have about 10 routine appointments plus 2 scans. If you have had a baby before, you'll usually be offered slightly fewer appointments, usually 7 plus 2 scans. We always want to test your wee at these appointments. You'll be surprised at the amount of information we get from your wee, from possibly needing a diabetes check to infection and even organ dysfunction. We can identify a lot. So unless you're doing your pee sample at home and bringing it in, come to your appointment needing to pee. Not hard when you're pregnant, I know, but I have had to wait for women to go to the loo so I can complete their antenatal check. By knowing what to expect at each appointment, you can prepare yourself better. If you have any non-urgent questions that pop up, start a little log on your phone now so that you don't forget. As you now know, you'll be offered tests in each antenatal appointment. If you have chosen to take them, midwives need to make sure we complete all of the tests properly and then document them. This takes up the majority of time. If you have questions or anything you'd like to run through, it is really helpful for us to know at the beginning of the appointment. This allows us to plan for your needs properly, and we can sometimes ask a maternity support worker or a student to do some of those tests while we address your other questions or needs. Sometimes you can tell us of any queries before, at an earlier appointment, or call ahead and let us know. For example, I didn't have a particularly busy clinic one day, but I knew I had 3 women who would need some extra time. So that morning, I asked if a third year, almost qualified, student midwife could work with me. That way, she was able to learn and help by doing the majority of the tests, while I could really address the concerns of those women who needed me. It worked out perfectly. The student learnt a lot, the women left feeling confident and cared for, and I left knowing that I'd done my job well. Winning. Had I not known that in advance, I would have offered for the student midwife to work with someone else, as I had a quieter clinic and had less time for those women that needed more advice. Information overload. There is usually a wide range of answers to questions you have throughout pregnancy, and new information, policies, and research is ever evolving and emerging. Some women have told me that they find this confusing, intimidating, or overwhelming. Knowing how to think critically about the answers you get and accept early on that there probably isn't one solution to your circumstance can be helpful. There'll be a range of answers to your questions, and you can find what works for you somewhere in that range. There's no blueprint to get from pregnancy to motherhood, and there's no one way to become a mother. Everyone is different. If you're diagnosed with anything, during or after your pregnancy, you'll need to ask questions so that you can think critically about your choices. For example, try these questions. What is? How can this affect me and my baby? What does this diagnosis mean for me personally moving forward? These simple questions can help you connect the information based on your personal circumstance and process it properly. Never be afraid to ask all the questions you need to, because your confidence and understanding are key to reducing anxiety and fear. Knowing your rights. Whether you're low or high risk, you need to make many choices throughout your pregnancy, birth, and beyond. All healthcare professionals know that you make the final call, but sometimes women feel as though they're in a system of care rather than at the centre of their own individual care. Katharina Scrum is a consultant obstetrician and trustee of the Birth Rights Organisation. She does a lot of work around informed consent and protection of women's birthrights, and is a true advocate for women when it comes to promoting informed choice and informed consent. I asked if she could give one message to all women about their choices and consent. What would it be? She said, "When it comes to a decision about any medical treatment, investigation, procedures, intervention, or non-intervention in childbirth, the decision lies with the woman. The role of the healthcare practitioner is to maintain a dialogue with the woman and her family as appropriate that helps determine what information the woman wants and needs, and providing that information in an unbiased way. Ultimately, that dialogue will help her achieve an informed choice. Critically, the woman is the decision maker. Healthcare professionals want to advocate choice, but I can't turn a blind eye to the times that women have told me they feel they don't have choices and are in a system. If at any point you feel like the decision-making isn't being explained, then it's really important to speak up and say how you feel. You can even use these words, "I don't feel like I'm making an informed choice. Using the latest evidence, please can you explain?" which may help you get the information you need to move forward with your decision. My friend, who's also a midwife, says, "Policies, guidelines, and standard operating procedures have been introduced in the hundreds. The goal? To create a practice that was standardized and evidence-based to reduce risk and improve safety. The difficulty here is that every mother, every pregnancy, and every baby are different. What is right for one may not be right for another." Using the brain. There's a popular acronym called the brain tool, and it can be used anytime you need to make a decision or are being given a recommendation. It stands for B, benefit. What are the benefits of this option? R, risk. What are the risks of this option? A, alternative. Is there an alternative that might be more suitable for you? I, instinct. Your maternal instinct can be strong at times and usually very helpful. N, nothing. What happens if you do nothing? You might not always have to act unless it's a true emergency. Can you wait and see? Sometimes women say things like, "I wasn't allowed," or "They took me for a C-section." If you take anything away from this section, take this. No one can do anything to you without your full, informed consent. Doctors and midwives are there to talk you through and explain options based on evidence, but you are in control. UK law protects all women during birth. Nothing can be done to you without informed consent. The very rare exception is if a woman lacks mental capacity, and I've only experienced this twice in my 10 years. If you don't know your options, you don't have any. Diana Corte, birth doula. Having talked about choice, it is important that we get the balance right. Midwives and doctors have a responsibility to protect and promote health and well-being throughout pregnancy, labour, birth, and the postnatal period. Putting the physical and psychological safety of the people in your care first involves a lot of complex considerations, and you won't be recommended to have medical intervention for absolutely no reason. There will be a reason. But to ensure that it's the right reason for you personally, you may just need to ask a few more questions using the brain tool. I've seen comments on social media and forums from non-professionals telling women things like, "Do not accept medical intervention," or "You do not need any drugs, natural is best." Always remember that it's never that black and white. But more importantly, it is impossible for anyone to give you accurate advice who does not have a qualification in maternity healthcare, obstetrics or midwifery, and who does not know your medical history, current condition, health and personal circumstances fully. Even if the advice comes from well-meaning friends, relatives, or online influencers, they need to have the right qualifications and experience to fully understand what has led up to your current situation. Sometimes people go on their own personal experience, what they have heard or seen, and don't necessarily understand the psychological implications or the risks involved when giving out advice. The classic comparison of one personal experience, like my nan smoked a pack of cigarettes a day and lived to 95, are out of the ordinary cases. This tells us absolutely nothing about average experiences. Smoking may not cause lung cancer in every person who smokes, but that doesn't mean to say it doesn't significantly increase the average risk. Be mindful of who and how you accept advice into your own decision making. What do your results mean? If any intervention is recommended or a routine test comes back as abnormal, it can be hard to really translate what that risk or abnormal result means. For example, if I told you that a condition that you have is common, can you accurately picture what that looks like in real terms? The RCOG's, Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, have a table of phrases used to describe risk by healthcare professionals. This is helpful to see, so you can get a more accurate picture of probability. Very common. 1 in 1 to 1 in 10 equals a person in your family. Common. 1 in 10 to 1 in 100, a person in the street. Uncommon. 1 in 100 to 1 in 1,000, a person in a village. Rare. 1 in 1,000 to 1 in 10,000, a person in a small town. Very rare. Less than 1 in 10,000, a person in a large town. How you interpret these figures is individual to you and comes down to your upbringing, life experiences, and your personal attitude to risk. For example, I can explain the evidence based on the risk of going more than 41 plus 5 days overdue and the risk of induction to two different women. One woman would want an induction ASAP, and another woman would think induction was unnecessary and choose further monitoring instead. How you feel about your decision is important, because you don't want to have a passive role in the decisions surrounding your pregnancy and birth. It is normal to feel nervous about your pregnancy and the decisions you make, but overall you want to feel calm, confident, and in control as much as possible. That is how your midwives and doctors should make you feel. Key points. Your situation is unique, and there's no blueprint to follow for pregnancy and motherhood. Remember to use the brain tool when presented with decision making. Everyone perceives risk differently. Midwives and doctors are there to help you, not take over. Ask as many questions as you need to. Informed consent is a legal requirement. Midwives, doctors, and hospitals have a duty of care and don't advise intervention without reason. But that doesn't mean you have to have it. Find out what will be covered at each appointment and tell us what you need in advance, if possible. You always have choices. You're a parent, not a patient. Modern midwifery. Midwifery gets a lot of media coverage at the moment due to TV programmes such as Call the Midwife or One Born Every Minute. But many people don't know what we are actually trained to do and how your midwife can really help you. Pregnancy and birth are often sensationalised for TV drama. A study conducted on One Born Every Minute found that there were no home births televised, and a range of births in midwifery-led units were not presented clearly. This could potentially lead viewers to the impression that it is normal to give birth with medical intervention, on labour ward, with doctors in or around the birth room. This is not an accurate reflection of birth for many women, and it isn't a true representation of midwifery either. I could go on about the media's version of birth, but you get the idea. It's more for entertainment and less about birth education. What you really need to know is that midwives are your best allies throughout pregnancy, birth, and the postnatal weeks. Your midwife knows the emotional and physical ins and outs of what you are going through. They know that no two women are the same. Even if you do see different midwives, which is becoming less common now, midwives have a range of experience that can help you. In this section, you're going to find out about what midwives really do behind the scenes, the future of midwifery, and what that means for you, and how you can make the most out of our particular skill set. We are trained professionals. You have to be really dedicated to midwifery and truly care for women and their babies in order to graduate. It's a lot of hard work. There is a phenomenal amount to learn. As a student, understanding medical terminology felt like learning another language. It's not just the names of conditions and the abbreviations used. The names of drugs and antibiotics are so long and hard to say, let alone spell. Amoxa-what? You are tested on both your theory and practical skills. There's a test towards the end of the course called the OSCE, Objective Structured Clinical Examination. You're taken into a skills laboratory with about three examiners and are introduced to a scenario that goes something like this. This is Mary. She's had a vaginal birth and lost 500 mils of blood. Off you go. You then need to improvise and physically show the examiners what you would do and talk them through all your decision-making, providing explanation and rationale. That's just one exam. There are about 18 in total. Testing continues after you've qualified too. You then need to complete your preceptorship, a period to guide and support all newly qualified midwives to make the transition from student and to develop their practice further, and demonstrate a wide variety of other skills under supervision by senior colleagues. Your skills are observed and signed off once you have proven you are competent, and the senior colleague who signs you off is accountable for doing so. After passing your midwifery degree and completing your preceptorship, you still need to update your skills regularly. We have continuing professional development, CPD, revalidation with the Nursing and Midwifery Council, NMC, and mandatory training to ensure that we are up to date with the latest research and guidelines. If you don't complete your professional duties, you can't work as a midwife. It's that simple. We are experts in natural pregnancy and birth, but are trained to recognise when things are starting to deviate from the norm. You never, ever stop learning or think you know it all in midwifery. Science and policies adjust their position based on the latest research and findings, and as a qualified midwife, you need to be doing that too. The NMC are one of the world's biggest professional regulators, and to practice midwifery in the UK, you need to be registered with them. They work to ensure that nurses, midwives, and nursing associates have the knowledge and skills to deliver consistent, quality care that keeps people safe. Their future midwife standards are being revised, and as part of their five-year plan for improvement, the NMC have also released Shaping the Future Themes. Candice Immerson, Director of Strategy Development at the NMC, said, "We really wanted to make a difference in the way we developed our new strategy that will take us from 2020 to 2025. Crucially, it's the how we went about doing it that is almost as important as what we want to see at the final endpoint. The how has absolutely been about working in partnerships to co-produce our strategic aims with those professionals on our register, with our partners, with the public, and with our colleagues within the NMC as well. By developing our future work in an inclusive way, we can be much better placed in ensuring this meets the needs of professions, aligns with the work of our partners, meets the expectations that the public has, and ultimately will help the NMC to do the best job that we possibly can for the benefit of everyone who wants to experience better, safer nursing and midwifery care. It's important for you to know all this about midwifery because you need to be able to trust your midwife and make use of her skills. Supporting your female physiology. Midwives are experts in normal, natural pregnancy and birth. We appreciate and know how to support your natural female physiology and things like the precious flow of oxytocin during birth, the main hormone responsible for labour progression and bonding. We understand and see the physiology of pregnancy and birth and breastfeeding work perfectly well, time after time. Midwives trust and understand these processes and can help you have the best chance of having a normal pregnancy, natural birth, and smoother postnatal period. Doctors are brilliant at dealing with complications and high-risk pregnancies, as their expertise lies with abnormalities and medical treatment. I have referred women to doctors and have been so grateful for their help because they have a different set of skills to midwives. One element that makes midwifery safe in the UK is access to good medical backup should you need it. Doctors do not need to deal with low-risk pregnancies, nor do they attend home births or observe birth in the way that midwives do. Doctors sometimes see things differently to us because they specialise in situations where a woman becomes unwell or something is abnormal. Midwives see both normal and abnormal, so we have an aerial perspective. We recognise when things are progressing normally and hang back, and we intervene if this changes or refer on, making sure we always stand by a woman and her decision, so that we are a true advocate for her. We are there for you. One of our skills is reserving judgment and simply speaking the truth. You can talk to your midwives like you're talking to a friend. Sometimes women are a little nervous or not sure if they can say that. Please say whatever you want, however you want. No question is a silly question. If something is bothering you, whether that is physical symptoms or feelings of anxiousness, your midwife has probably heard it before. Talk about whatever is on your mind. Whether you see a midwife at home, at a clinic, or in hospital, we know that you are at the centre of your own care. Midwives will follow your lead. Our primary focus is hearing about what you want, so we can then give you the best care possible. Midwives work holistically, so we're good at digging deeper to get to know your personal circumstances, especially if you have a problem. We look at the root cause of the problem, not just the treatment. The finer details about you matter because it means we can fully support you in whatever situation you are in. Sometimes I have suspected that patients are bending the truth, but I can promise you that there's no reason to. First, I'm bound to confidentiality, and secondly, we tend to work it out. We are always on your side, and we want to help you. So even if you feel like it's embarrassing, sounds silly, or you don't think it's possible to achieve, being honest really helps us work as a team. Your midwife can only be your best advocate once you have that open level of honesty. We are here for you, no matter what. Whether you have a vaginal birth or a C-section, bottle feed or breastfeed, we are on your side. Whether you are 18 or 45, speak English, Russian or Swahili, are single or had six other children with your childhood sweetheart, we are right behind you. Midwives are autonomous professionals that are up to date with evidence-based information, so if you want to run something by us or check something out, we can be a good source of information, know specific resources to signpost you to, and support you. Just tell us what you need and we will do our best to help you achieve it. Having this transparency between midwife and mother is so important. Continuity of carer. There are plans in the NHS to provide most women with continuity of carer by March 2021. This is where a woman sees the same midwife who is responsible for her care throughout pregnancy, birth, and postnatally. It is being recognised by leading health organisations and authorities that midwifery-led care leads to better outcomes, less interventions, and more positive memories of birth. A 2016 review on the Cochrane database, it includes over 17,000 mothers and babies at the time of publication, suggests that women who received midwife-led care were less likely to experience intervention and were more likely to be satisfied with their care. The Better Births campaign, which you should look into further if you get the chance, highlights how midwifery-led approach ensures women are at the centre of their own care. I recently had the opportunity to shadow some of the most senior midwives in England, Claire Matthews and Jacqueline Dunkley-Bent. Their persistence, vision, and dedication to make England one of the safest places on earth to give birth is remarkable. Their aim is for most women to have access to continuity of carer by 2021, and they are working tirelessly to achieve this. The momentum of change across England towards achieving this is fantastic to see. In 2018, just 2% of women had continuity of carer, and by March 2019, this had risen to 17.3%. Some local maternity systems are already achieving over 34% continuity of carer, and one trust even achieved 43%. The trajectory for March 2020 is 35% across England, and the NHS is well on its way to achieving this goal. I've met a lot of doctors, professors, and managers in my time as a midwife, but the senior midwives are more than their titles. They are midwifery pioneers. The Maternity Transformations Programme has the latest information and a useful animation that simply explains what this means for you as a pregnant woman in England. If the NHS continuity of care model is not available in your area yet, or you live outside of England, there is another option for you, such as an independent midwife, IM. Independent midwives vary in price depending on the region. If you are interested, have a look on IM UK. It's a trusted site representing independent midwives. It is important to ensure that if you do hire an IM, they are registered with the NMC and can legally look after you. If cost is a worry, many offer payment plans and may consider an exchange of skills in place of payment. Here, Louise, an IM, tells us one story. I recently looked after a woman whose other half can build things, so he's building me a shed rather than paying money. They are only paying for the insurance costs and are paying that in small, affordable instalments. I like exchanging skills and going back to how we used to barter for services and goods. It's a myth that IMs only look after the wealthy. They're usually willing to talk openly about money and how they can help families afford their care. Whatever care you choose to have, NHS, private, or independent midwifery care, feeling safe is the most important thing. If you feel well supported and respected, then you will have a better overall experience. If you are having any issues with your midwife or care provider, then you need to address them ASAP. If you are under NHS care, the line manager, head of midwifery, or patient liaison service, Patient Advice and Liaison Service PALS, can help you to address your concerns. You aren't being a diva by doing this. Disagreements or disconnection can lead to tension, so it's better to get it resolved. You need to feel calm, confident, and in control throughout your pregnancy and birth. Always remember that you may not be a maternity expert, but you are an expert in your body, and you know your preferences. That is why it's important to partner with a professional that you trust to help make decisions in line with your vision and values. They will understand how you personally perceive risk and what you would like, whether that is an epidural as early as possible or a drug-free birth behind your garden tree. We are here for you. Cheryl Samuels, NHS midwife, says, "Modern midwifery is about promoting a holistic, woman-centred social model of care. This model takes into consideration the biological, psychological, and social aspects of pregnancy and birth. It is important for new parents to balance evidence-based information with their intuition and really think what is right for them in their individual circumstances. All women deserve to be central in decision-making and feel supported in their choices by their care providers." Changing times. There has never been a time like this in human history where we have had the combination of modern medicine, ancient midwives' wisdom, technology, and access to so much information at our fingertips. All generations of midwives, doctors, and scientists that have gone before us have allowed us to live in this unique time for women's healthcare. Midwifery is one of the oldest jobs in human history, and exists in virtually every human society that has ever been studied. At some points in history, midwifery has been misunderstood and was even associated with witchcraft in the 15th and 16th centuries. We've come a long way since then, and modern midwifery is stronger than ever in the UK. Elizabeth Iroh, World Health Organization's Chief Nursing Officer, celebrated International Day of the Midwife with a video referring to midwives as defenders of women's rights, and highlighted how we protect and promote the rights of women globally. Midwives and doctors are bridging the gaps between traditional understanding of birth and advancement in medicine. There is a growing collaboration between mothers, midwives, and obstetricians. We all respect and understand each other's roles. You, are the ultimate decision maker and the reason we are here. Midwives support natural female physiology and recognize deviations from the norm. Obstetricians help diagnose deviations from the norm and provide treatment for complications. When we all work together, the outcome offers women the best care humanity has ever seen. Modern midwifery is about holding a safe space for women to allow and encourage the natural workings of their body. It is about supporting women to have access to advances in medicine and pain relief, but to decline intervention when they simply don't want it. It is about making the best use of medical care when it is required. Most recently, it is about letting go of the natural versus medical debate and simply working together as a team. Modern midwifery is right at the heart of an era of change for women, and I couldn't be prouder of the progress we have made. Key points. Midwives are safe, expert guardians of normality, but support modern advancements in medical management of pregnancy and birth. Your midwife is right beside you. No question is a silly question. Make the most of your appointments and tell your midwife if you need more support. We are all on the same team, aiming at the same goal. There's no us and them. Letting go of natural versus medical is part of modern midwifery. Food and fuel for life. In this part, we will cover what is best to eat during pregnancy and how to have a healthier pregnancy. I've asked Laura Hughes, my friend, an expert in pre- and postnatal nutrition from the Pregnancy Food Company, to help me cover the most important things you need to know about food. And she's got some easy, yummy recipes for you too, later on in this section. I'm pretty sure you'll agree that the food to avoid in pregnancy is generally well covered these days, and you'll be given a list by your midwife at your booking appointment. But when it comes to making choices about what to actually put into your body, things can get confusing and different people say different things. You may be fortunate enough to be approached by total strangers, colleagues, and others, and may receive random dietary advice. It usually goes something like, "I see you've got a tuna sandwich. Did you know you can't eat tuna when you're pregnant?" I've heard some weird and wonderful advice that women have been given. Some people suddenly take on a public health role around pregnant women and just can't help projecting their opinion onto you. As long as you're in the know, it is usually best to smile and nod. And for the record, you can eat tuna in pregnancy. You just need to limit your intake due to mercury levels. 2 cans a week is plenty for most, but the official guidelines state that you can have up to 4. Facts about food. Your diet and nutrition during pregnancy can affect your baby's development and long-term health, which we'll cover in a moment. Although jumping into this may be a bit heavy for some, it is worth knowing about the relationship you are creating with your baby through food. There's a sad but valuable study that has taught us just how much of an impact food intake has on a growing baby in the womb. The Dutch Hunger Winter Study. In the winter spring of 1944, the German occupation limited rations to everyone, including around 40,000 pregnant women. The famine affected people of all social classes. In the Netherlands and Amsterdam, people received as little as 400 to 800 calories per day. By 1945, the hunger was over and access to food returned to normal. The Dutch Hunger Winter Study was published 32 years later, having looked into long-term effects of this food deprivation. It provides one of the only human experiments on the effects of intrauterine, pregnancy, deprivation on adult health. People who were born to pregnant women during this time were generally more obese, had more incidence of diabetes, heart disease, and higher blood pressure later on in life. The intrauterine experience of hunger seems to have changed their body for life. These babies grew and developed whilst experiencing scarcity, but were born into a world of abundance, and their bodies struggled to adapt. What we can take from this rare study is the fact that what you eat tells your baby a kind of story about the world they are coming into, and they use this information to adapt their body during pregnancy to prepare for the outside world. So what you eat during pregnancy does matter. But don't worry, there are lots of simple things you can do to help you and your baby be as healthy as possible. What's best to eat during pregnancy? Laura Hughes, owner of the Pregnancy Food Company, hopes to help women all over the world have happier, healthier pregnancies. Here are her top tips and recipe recommendations. It's not always easy to eat a balanced diet during pregnancy. Cravings, morning sickness, and tiredness all contribute to different, perhaps less than ideal, food choices. However, our requirement for micronutrients increases during pregnancy, so combining a wide variety of good quality protein, fat, and carbohydrates will help provide these essential micronutrients. And as we have just learnt, our diet does have an effect on the baby we are growing inside our tummies. Whilst we don't need to stress or obsess over having the perfect diet, we certainly do need to be mindful of what we are putting in our bodies. Take a pregnancy or breastfeeding multivitamin supplement throughout pregnancy and for at least 6 months after the birth for the duration of breastfeeding. Do not take supplements containing vitamin A in retinol form, as too much could harm your baby. Always check the label. There are now a whole range of food-grown supplements on the market that are absorbed better by the body as they contain nutrients in their natural form. Take an algae-based omega-3 and vitamin D3 supplement. The NHS recommends 400 micrograms per day of folic acid from when you try to conceive to the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. The best version of folic acid is the natural form, methylfolate or folate. It is also now widely recommended that 10 microgram supplement of vitamin D3 is taken every day in the winter in the UK, and in the summer too if you don't get much direct sunlight. Try to eat protein with every meal. Protein consists of amino acids, which are literally the building blocks of life. Very useful when growing a human. Eating protein with each meal also helps to control blood sugar levels, which are often harder to control as the placenta releases hormones, interrupting our insulin response. Protein can come in many forms, some of which include chickpeas, lentils, lean meats, fish, free-range eggs, and peas. Carbohydrates provide essential energy for the body, much needed in pregnancy and postpartum, and are also a source of fibre, vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants. Try to source your carbohydrates from vegetables, whole fruits, and whole grains. It's a good idea to pair your carbohydrates with some fat or protein rather than having them naked to prevent blood sugar spikes. Ideally, we would be eating up to 8 portions of veg and 2 portions of fruit each and every day. Good sources of carbohydrate include vegetables, whole grain bread, pasta, rice, and oats. If you are dealing with nausea and food aversions, don't worry. It's both normal and okay to eat more carbs during this phase. It can help ease the nausea. If you do only feel like eating toast or similar, try to pair it with a fat or protein, such as nut butter, to slow the absorption of sugars. Include healthy fats every day, like olive oil, avocado, nuts, seeds, small oily fish, and butter. Fats are essential for hormone production, skin elasticity, brain development, absorption of fat-soluble vitamins, and many other functions in the body. If you consume dairy, buy the full-fat kind rather than the zero-fat. Full fat is packed full of vitamins, probiotics, and calcium. Man-made trans fats found in shop-bought cookies, cakes, and in margarine should be avoided. Hydrate. Adequate water assists the stretching of the skin as your belly grows, the increase in blood volume and amniotic fluid, and also helps reduce the frequency of headaches and tiredness. Aim for 2 litres a day. A word on organic. I recommend you buy organic produce where you can. Not all of us can afford organic all the time, though, so look up the Clean 15 and Dirty Dozen list to find out how you can avoid the foods with the most chemicals. Unfortunately, a lot of the time the healthier, Most nutritious foods are the more expensive options. If you are in need of financial support, you may well be eligible for the Healthy Start Scheme. This is a means-tested scheme that gives you vouchers to spend with local retailers. Pregnant women and children over 1 and under 4 years old are eligible. Healthy Start also provides vitamin scheme, especially for pregnant and breastfeeding women. Do look at frozen and canned veg too, which can be more affordable and just as nutritious, frozen especially. You can even get frozen avocado and edamame beans. Vegetarian and vegan diets. These can be successfully maintained throughout pregnancy and breastfeeding with a bit of careful planning. Make sure to include the following and speak to your midwife or nutritionist about your specific needs too. Nutritional yeast for extra B12 should be included daily. Fortified Enjavita yeast flakes are a good source to try. Iron-rich foods such as dark leafy greens and lentils should be eaten with a source of vitamin C, such as peppers or tomatoes, to improve absorption. Vitamin D from free-range egg yolks, which also provide choline, the sun, or a supplement. Buckwheat, hemp, and quinoa are sources of complete protein. Nuts, seeds, and dark leafy greens are a source of iron and zinc. Seaweed for a good source of iodine and iron. Sesame seeds, broccoli, cabbage, tahini, and pulses for calcium. Soaked whole grains, beans, and legumes. It is essential to include a high-quality pregnancy supplement every day, as we cannot obtain everything we need from food sources. Looking after yourself. You have a lot on at the moment, but eating well will help to support you during this busy time. Here are a few ideas that my clients have found useful to help them eat well. Follow the 80-20 system, with 80% of your foods being as healthy as possible and being more relaxed about the other 20%. This can help to make eating healthily more relaxed and positive. You don't have to eat perfectly all the time. Cooking from scratch is ideal, as we know what's going into our foods. Batch cooking can be a lifesaver here. Take it one meal at a time if you aren't used to cooking much, or might want to look into the delivery box schemes that provide you with ingredients to cook from scratch. Snacks can pack in the nutrients. Try and plan ahead with your snacks, so you don't have to grab a muffin or whatever when you're out and about. Apples and nut butter, carrot sticks and hummus, nuts and berries, and boiled eggs are great snack choices, as they all contain protein. Get yourself a good quality water bottle to carry around with you. A glass one is ideal. If using a plastic bottle you already own, check that it is BPA-free. Bisphenol A has links with endocrine disruption. Green smoothies can be very helpful if you're struggling to get the nutrients in. You can even make one up and freeze it into suckable ice cubes if that helps with the nausea. Avoid artificial sweeteners and processed foods as much as possible. As a general rule, if you can't pronounce the ingredient, it shouldn't be eaten. Try eating seasonally. A list of seasonal produce is easily found online and can really help boost nutrient value, as well as give you more variety. Aim to eat salmon, mackerel, or sardines at least twice a week. Tuna, canned or fresh, can be enjoyed too, but 2 cans a week is ample. Avoid bigger fish, such as swordfish and marlin, as they contain high levels of mercury. Soft cheeses can be eaten as long as they are pasteurised, many are, or cooked, such as baked camembert. Salad, veg, and fruit should always be washed well with clean water. Meat or shellfish should be well cooked. Smoked salmon and sushi is okay to enjoy, providing it has been frozen and defrosted to kill off bacteria and parasites. Most supermarket smoked salmon will be frozen first. Check the packet to be sure. Sugary drinks and foods really do need to be limited due to the effect on the baby's metabolic health and your own blood sugar levels. Diet drinks with sweeteners aren't great either, as they can contain unhealthy additives. Nuts are safe to eat in pregnancy and are a good source of protein, as long as you aren't allergic, of course. If you have very old non-stick pans, you might like to swap your cooking pots and pans to cast iron or stainless steel, as old pans can release nasty chemicals when heated. Pregnancy super recipes. If you are struggling for inspiration in your cooking, why not try some of these recipes? They are all packed with nutrition, so you feel you are really looking after yourself. Chewy ginger and apricot biscuits. These are great for morning sickness. Ginger has been used for centuries as an antiemetic, anti-sickness. The chewy apricots, molasses, and egg yolks are ideal for providing a boost to vitamins and minerals you may be missing when experiencing morning sickness. If you prefer to make vegan versions of these biscuits, just swap the butter for coconut oil. Make sure you add a pinch of salt to the recipe too. And the egg yolks can be replaced with flax egg. Makes 24. The ingredients for this recipe are 200 grams of rye flour, 3 level teaspoons of ground ginger, 1 heaped teaspoon of cinnamon, 60 grams of dried apricots, 60 grams of salted butter, 60 grams of blackstrap molasses, and 2 egg yolks. Measure out the rye flour into a mixing bowl, then add the ginger and cinnamon and mix thoroughly. Cut the dried apricots into small little chunks, about the size of a raisin. Alternatively, you could whiz in a blender. Add these to the rye flour mix. Next, measure out the butter and molasses into a saucepan. Put on a low heat and stir until the mixture is melted and is warm through. Alternatively, you can use the microwave. Just pop it on defrost and do 30-second blasts until melted. Add the butter mixture to the flour and mix well. Add the egg yolks and mix again. Cover the mixing bowl and place in the fridge for 20 minutes. Meanwhile, heat the oven to 175 degrees Celsius or 350 degrees Fahrenheit and take the mixing bowl out of the fridge. Divide the mixture into 24 balls, rolling with your hands. If you find the mixture sticky to handle, dust your hands with a little rye flour. Line a baking sheet with baking paper and place the balls equally spaced. You might need 2 trays with 12 biscuits on each one. Now push down on each ball with the palm of your hand to squash down into a nice biscuit shape. Bake in the oven for 12 minutes. Cool on a wire rack. Once cooled, you can eat them straight away or keep them in an airtight container for 5 days or in the freezer for 3 months. Banana and cashew chia porridge. During pregnancy, it's really important to get a source of protein in at every meal. This recipe packs in the protein to keep you feeling fuller for longer. Growing a baby is hungry work. It also helps to keep your blood sugar level more stable, which is essential during pregnancy. Banana contains potassium and vitamin B6, which can help combat morning sickness. Make this the night before and leave in the fridge, or in the morning. Double up if you like. This will last in the fridge for up to 2 days. Serves 1. The ingredients for this recipe are 100 ml of any nut milk, 30 grams of chia seeds, 1 tablespoon of cashew nut butter, 1/2 banana, sliced or mashed, you can use frozen, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract. Optional toppings. 1 tablespoon of frozen or fresh berries. Use a mix of raspberries, blackberries, red currants, and/or blueberries. 1 teaspoon of black sesame seeds. Regular sesame seeds are fine too. Combine all the ingredients in a bowl or large glass. You can use a food processor if you like a smooth consistency, or just mix with a spoon. When ready to eat, add the berries and sesame seeds. Food for thought. Being as healthy as possible in pregnancy isn't just about what you are eating. It is also about your relationship with food and everything else you are putting into your amazing body. I know this is something the women I see think about, and it's certainly something I work on. I used to think nothing of shoving a sandwich in my face whilst rushing to work and grabbing food on the go until I learnt about mindful eating. Mindful eating is simply being as aware as possible each time you eat. This helps change your perception of food and places more of a focus on what will give me and my baby the most nutrients. That way, you will naturally lean towards the healthier option. Of course, there will be days when you need to grab something quick and easy on the go. It just shouldn't be a habit. Being mindful about what you are eating, but feeling miserable about depriving yourself, defeats the object. So if you've got a sweet tooth and often fancy a dessert, then maybe share one. That way you've had a treat, but not overdone it on the sugar, and you will have really enjoyed each mouthful. Win-win. As already mentioned, something that seems to work for many women is the 80-20 rule. It is important to enjoy treats. You deserve them too. Weight gain. There are no formal evidence-based guidelines from the UK government or other professional bodies on the amount of weight women should gain in pregnancy, although it is often debated. What we do know is that heart disease and diabetes are seriously on the increase, and those diagnosed are younger than ever before. The British Heart Foundation and Diabetes UK have recent and rather concerning statistics on the prevalence and serious health implications these two bring with them. I'm all for being body positive. How you feel about and talk to yourself is so important. Your body is amazing. But it is also important that I'm upfront and honest with you. Your weight can really affect your risks during pregnancy. Managing being overweight may not be as simple as eat less and do more. I understand there is a lot more to why women are increasingly overweight or obese. Rather than focusing on weight gain, it is better to understand how to be healthier and the recommended increase in calorie intake. Most people know eating for two is not good for you. It's all over the press and in most pregnancy books. But what that means in real terms is that you don't actually need to increase your calorie intake until the third trimester. That's just from 28 weeks until the end of your pregnancy. From that point on, it is currently recommended that eating an extra 200 calories per day is sufficient for providing the extra energy you need. That looks like a handful of dried apricots. It really isn't much. The only exception to this is if you have a very active lifestyle, say, working on a farm or teaching exercise classes all day, then you may need a little extra energy intake right from the start of your pregnancy. Alcohol. No one really knows the safe amount pregnant women can consume, so national guidelines recommend pregnant women do not drink alcohol throughout their entire pregnancy. Not drinking alcohol during the first trimester is definitely a good idea because it is the most crucial point for development. After that, some women tell me that they enjoy the odd glass of wine. According to the research available and several other experts, one unit once a week probably won't do either of you any harm. The fact is, we don't know enough about what even minimal alcohol consumption does in pregnancy. What we do know is that alcohol passes across the placenta, so the more you drink, the more your baby receives. The evidence on drinking during pregnancy is complex because everyone has different lifestyles. A woman who has a well-balanced diet, good emotional support, does regular exercise, and has the odd glass of wine should be fine. When a woman has other risk factors, stressors, and an unhealthy lifestyle, perhaps drinking isn't a good idea. Coffee and caffeine intake. I'm a coffee addict and far from being alone here. You might not be a coffee fan, but there is caffeine in many drinks, so listen on. The bad news is, a few credible and large-scale studies have come to the same conclusion. High caffeine intake can increase the risk of miscarriage, reduce placental blood flow, and therefore the flow of nutrients to your baby, which can impact growth and development. The good news is that there is an amount of coffee you can drink safely. For those of you who don't drink coffee, you also need to factor in caffeine in fizzy drinks, chocolate, and tea. For precaution, most experts agree that up to 200 milligrams of caffeine per day is safe. To be honest, that meant nothing to me. So here is a guide. One mug of instant coffee equals 100 milligrams. One cup of filter coffee equals 140 milligrams. One can of Coke equals 40 milligrams. One can of energy drink equals 80 milligrams. One dark chocolate bar, 42 grams, equals 25 milligrams. One milk chocolate bar, 42 grams, equals 15 milligrams. What else is going into your body? It might surprise you to realise that we ingest chemicals through our makeup and beauty products. We are also exposed to chemicals when out and about, car fumes, etc. Here are some tips to help you reduce your exposure to harmful chemicals, which is important at any stage of life, and especially in pregnancy. Chemicals. Avoiding harmful chemicals is near impossible these days. Overall, try to use natural beauty products and avoid conventional cleaning products in the home. Some chemicals in particular are thought to be more harmful than others during pregnancy, and a few of these can be easily avoided. Parabens, also known as propylparaben, butylparaben, isopropylparaben, and methylparabens. They are mostly used as preservatives in cosmetics like foundation and lipstick to prevent them from growing bacteria. Phthalates, most commonly found in scented products like soaps, perfumes, and shampoos. Formaldehyde, found in things like nail polish, eyelash glue, and various other products. Some studies have shown that formaldehyde exposure could cause cancer, and in 2016, the chemical was classified as a carcinogen in the UK. That isn't to say you need to chuck out all your makeup and never get your nails or lashes done. It is just good to be aware of your chemical exposure during pregnancy. There are other options and more natural products on the market. You can make your own nourishing lotions from things like coconut oil, rosehip oil, or shea butter too. Fresh air. Your environment is really important too. Getting fresh air is really good for your health. Not exactly a newsflash, I know, but this can sometimes be forgotten. Getting fresh air for your placenta matters. If you live or work near a busy road or in a built-up area, try to get out to the park or out of the city as often as possible. Getting a few houseplants can help filter the air around you too. If you are thinking of painting the nursery bedroom for your baby, it is important to ensure that the paint is safe. Try to opt for an eco paint that is water-based and has zero volatile organic compounds, VOCs. Many carpets contain chemicals, especially if plastic-based. If you get a new carpet, make sure it is fitted at least 2 months before the baby is due, as the chemicals can linger for a while. Having a healthy pregnancy is all about balance. Realistically, eating a brownie or getting a takeaway every now and then isn't going to put you or your baby at risk. If you eat nutritious food most of the time, try to relax, stay active, get out in the fresh air, and avoid harsh chemicals as much as possible. Overall, you're being as healthy as you can be. In reality, it's not about the one-offs. It's about the daily things you do. Key points. Food really is fuel for the life you are growing. Your baby is developing and getting cues from your food intake. Opt for nutrient-rich food as much as possible. Nourishing yourself is important during pregnancy and beneficial for your baby too. Try to eat a variety of fresh, wholesome food where possible. Aim for a good mixture of protein, vegetables, fruits, fats, and carbohydrates. Alcohol can pass through to the placenta during pregnancy, and the advice is to limit the amount you drink. Watch your caffeine intake. It can really creep up if you love coffee, tea, and chocolate. Try the 80-20 rule to get a great balance between eating well and the occasional treat. Enjoy your food and don't be too hard on yourself. Consider everything you are putting into your body. get fresh air, and avoid harsh chemicals.